Welcome to the Pumps and Systems Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Champlin, managing editor of Pumps and Systems Magazine. You can find our podcast on pumpsandsystems.com/podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and CastBox. Today, we are pleased to be joined by Todd Loudon of Flowrox, and we will talk about peristaltic pumps, including the basics, the best fit, how designs have changed over the last 15 years, and what he wishes users knew. Todd is a member of our editorial advisory board, and he has written plenty for us, including recently in the July 2018 issue on a monitoring and control system and how it reduced labor in a Finnish wastewater plant. He has also hosted many webinars, which can be found on our website on the webinars section. Todd, how are you doing?
Doing well, Drew. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us. And before we get to peristaltic pumps, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been at Flowrox, and your background in the industry?
Well, I've been in the valve and pump industry my entire career, right directly out of college. I started with Nellis James Berry Metso, was with them for a period of time, and then my latest stint has been 24 years in October with Flowrox. So I found a home, and I kind of like it here, so I'm the president of North American operations, but I also have a side title of vice president of global sales. So I get to travel a little bit and see a lot of customers and industries. So there is some experience in what I've seen so far. So
absolutely, and we're happy to have that experience on this podcast. So let's talk about some peristaltic pumps. Todd, first off, what exactly is a peristaltic pump?
Well, the term peristaltic really originates from medical terminology. Peristalsis, it's hard to say, is the basically the involuntary constriction and relaxation of the muscles of the intestines or another canal, creating wave-like movements that push the contents of the canal forward. So basically, the act of swallowing is the same action that a peristaltic pump creates. Basically, a rubber hose or polymeric tube is compressed, and it pushes the fluid through the pump or through the hose. And then as the compression departs, the surface of the hose rebounds back to open, and it pulls slurry or liquid in back into the hose or the tube to begin to pump again. So that's the basis of how a peristaltic pump works.
And you don't have your doctorate, do you?
No, I do not.
Okay, well, I've learned a lot there. That's actually a very good description. When we get into peristaltic pumps, what situations are the best fit for them?
Well, if you've got an application where the pump may ever run dry, you know, that's can be devastational to certain types or styles of pumps. But a peristaltic pump can handle run dry. It can run dry permanently without any damage at all to the pump. They are very good for suction lift duties, and they also are fully reversible. One customer that comes to mind is a customer out in Indiana, and they're recycling, you know, junk cars, and they've got a very large thickener that's collecting all kinds of stuff. And what happens is, you know, they get tramp metal in there, foam from car seats, just all kinds of stuff, and occasionally the big thickener, the pipeline out of it, it clogs. And our pump is actually at the bottom of that thickener. That thickener, when it clogs, it actually, they can reverse the pump and apply pressure backwards and then blow out the clog and then begin pumping again. So that's kind of a good example of a fully reversible situation that works well for one customer. And then, you know, one of the very best applications, I think, for peristaltics is very high solid slurry contents. So 70 to 80% or even higher slurries. Very difficult for a lot of other pumps, but that's a good situation for a peristaltic that can perform and survive in that kind of an environment. It can also be successful as well in very corrosive or very aggressive chemicals, caustics and such. Utilizing, you know, like rubber hoses such as like EPDM or Hypalon, or if it's a tube pump, tubing such as Norprene or Tygothane, allow these pumps to be used in various applications where the rubber hose or the tube is the only thing that's in contact with the medium. It can, you don't need to go to, say, exotic alloys on the pump housing. So you can minimize your cost just by using that those hoses and tubes, and they survive well in the certain types of chemicals. So, and then, you know, some of the most common chemicals pumped by peristaltic pumps are, you know, like sodium hypochlorite, ferric chloride, peroxide, lime slurry or milk of lime. Those are just some common ones we see quite often. And then when you're talking about very high solid content abrasive slurries, some of those applications, again, lime slurry is mentioned. Lime's very, it's both abrasive, has a tendency to scale, and so it can be an interesting little beast for certain types of pumps. But then as well, various types of thickeners or clarifiers, peristaltic pumps are very successful there, and, you know, the steel industry, wastewater, the mining. So the thickener underflow is a very common application, so, or clarifier underflow. Then as well, one other key application that comes to mind is peristaltic pumps are low shear devices. So they're great for pumping of flocculants or reagents. They don't damage the long polymer chains of a flocculant in the action of pumping. So the flocculants actually perform better, or they're more effective, let's say. And typically, companies end up utilizing less flocculant or reagents to perform the work that they want them to do. Whereas things like, you know, like for instance, a gear pump or centrifugal, they agitate and even chop those polymer chains up. So what, in effect, the customer will end up having to do is use much more flocculant and a cost of that because they got to add more to get the same effectiveness because they've basically destroyed the flocculant chains or the polymer chains. So, and one very, you know, interesting, or a couple very interesting applications, you know, peristaltic pumps have even been used to pump live fish and even whole strawberries because it doesn't damage the medium going through the pump. So,
how big are the fish? Or how big can they be, I guess?
Well, they're quite small, actually. The largest pump that Flowrox manufactures is actually a 4-inch diameter. So they'd be relatively small fish.
Yeah, Todd, you mentioned the EPDM and the rubber hose, or EPDM rubber hoses. What do you mean by that? What does that stand for?
EPDM is ethylene propylene diene monomer rubber, and it's a elastomer that has a good use in wide range of applications. It's got good chemical resistance, and that's why it's obviously good for those chemicals I mentioned, or some of them.
Good deal. Okay. Obviously, so you just mentioned what situations are the best fit for the pumps. So what are some common issues with peristaltic pumps?
Well, peristaltic pumps are definitely limited on their temperature capabilities. Peristaltic pumps, you know, utilizing a rubber hose, the maximum temperature in degree F is roughly around 210 degrees Fahrenheit. If it's a polymeric tubing such as Norprene, then the temperature would be maximum about 130 degrees F, and that's the temperature of the medium. So that's one limitation. Peristaltic pumps also cannot create as high a flow rates as certain style of pumps. So, you know, maximum flow rates on some of the largest diameter peristaltic pumps is typically in the neighborhood of 400 to 600 gallons per minute. So if a customer would need to pump something that is 1,000 gallons per minute, they'd be forced to either utilize two peristaltic pumps to do that service, or they might choose a different style of pump, quite frankly. So, also, in the past, some of the complaints about peristaltic pumps is that they have to change the rubber hoses or tubes too frequently. And in earlier designs, the first designs were called a shoe pump. And they did have limited hose lifetime, which meant customers had more frequent repairs than they might have liked. But with some of the newer single roller designs, reliability is increased pretty dramatically.
Okay. What are the different types of peristaltic pump designs?
Well, I would categorize them into basically three types. I'd call them a double shoe design, and then you have multiple roller designs, And then the final would be an eccentric single roller design. And then with the smaller metering pumps, there's a litany of ones that utilize polymeric tubing, such as Norprene or Tyguthane that I mentioned. To go back to like the double shoe design, I'm going to try to give you a visual image of what I'm talking about, but it's a design that has two metal bumps, or they call them shoes, that are rotating in a 360-degree circle. And so, like, picture your automobile rim on your car, and you take the tire off and got that metal rim, and then you build two bumps on that 180 degrees away from each other on that rim. And then you put that into a housing, and then you put a hose inside of that housing. And as that rim rotates around, those metal shoes are compressing that hose twice every 360-degree revolution. So one of the disadvantages of that design is those metal bumps are generating a significant amount of heat and friction. So the shoe pumps, they put a lot of food-grade glycerin into the housing. And that's to help both lubricate the hose, but it's also, more importantly, there to help dissipate the heat. And most shoe pumps I said these shoes designs, I mentioned metal rims. They obviously don't use a metal rim, but I just tried to use that as a description to give a visual, image to everyone. But most shoe pumps have a metal arm with a fixed rotation point right in the middle of that, with the shoes at the very end of each end of the arms, or some other kind of circular structure that has shoes built onto it. So, but as I mentioned, shoe designs generate a lot of heat. So one of the things that does is it severely limits the rotation speed of the pump if you're going to use it in continuous duty, because it will just become so hot that it will destroy both the hose and the bearings of the pump. So. Also, as I mentioned, the glycerin that they put in there, this becomes one of the most expensive consumables in the pumps, believe it or not. When you have to change that multiple times a year, and there's lots of glycerin in there, in the bigger pumps, maybe 16 gallons of that glycerin at $100 a gallon, so it becomes a pretty expensive throwaway. Also, the shoe design typically has some of the highest electrical consumption out of all the types of peristaltic pumps, so that's one worth mentioning. But the most important thing about them is, though, that they're compressing the hose two times every 360-degree revolution. And many people assume that the number one determinant of how long the hose will last is how the medium is affecting that. But the reality is how the medium is reacting and, attacking the hose, when in reality, the number one determinant of how long hoses typically last in peristaltic pumps is how many times you compress that rubber hose. So that is a misconception, I think, in a lot of cases. So the next design that I'll talk about is the multiple roller design. And that can have a very similar arrangement, but instead of having shoes, it has two rollers. It can have as many as two to four rollers. But obviously, if you're using, if you're increasing the number of rollers, then you are increasing the number of compressions on the tube, which will further damage the tube and the life of the tube. So two rollers is definitely better than four rollers, let's say, in a peristaltic pump for life of the hose or the tube. So multiple roller designs, I would say, are better than shoe designs, because they eliminate that significant heat generated by the shoe designs, and they don't require an immense amount of glycerin for lubrication, and also they don't have to dissipate the heat because they don't really generate heat. So, however, they still do, if it's a two-roller design, it still does compress the hose twice every 360-degree revolution. So that can limit their hose life. So. And then the final design, the newest design, I think, on the market is the eccentric single roller design. And this design basically incorporates an eccentric shaft and a heavy-duty roller that rolls over the hose only once every 360-degree revolution. So with this design, you can pretty much count on side-by-side comparison, it's going to have double the life of any of those two previous type of hose pumps. And that's just to mention people call peristaltic pumps hose pumps as well. Sorry if I didn't clarify that. But if you compare that eccentric single roller design to a shoe pump, because of the heat generated, the hose life extension is often 2 to 5 times longer than a shoe design. So it can be dramatically better.
Okay. How have these pumps changed in the last 15 years?
Good question, Drew. The rubber manufacturing, it's come just miles from the beginning. I mean, you know, if you got a little bit of age on you like me, you can remember a long time ago car tires didn't last very long, and they last a really long time today. So rubber technology continues to improve, and since the rubber hose is the main wear component in a pump, and a peristaltic pump, then that's important. But and also as well, the tubing for tube pumps is also improving to, you know, extend that mean time between failure. But I think the eccentric single roller design is one of the biggest game changers that's come along. By compressing that hose only once every 360 degree revolution, the hose life is doubled, and the other design, the two roller designs, and 2 to 5 times longer than shoe designs. And in presentations that I give, you know, say for instance at engineering firms and such, it's amazing. You put up an animation showing the two types, and I've never had a slide that's so visually, you sit and you watch the engineers' faces and you see them actually get it, you know, instantaneously. That's better than that, you know. So it's nice to have that feature, that be able to say so. And then finally, the most recent advancement is the ability to make pumps smart with IIoT, or Industrial Internet of Things connectivity and monitoring, and you can help to maximize uptime, decrease maintenance costs, and also prove all this lower total cost of ownership. Because if you really are monitoring a pump, you know exactly how long the hoses are lasting, what the energy consumption. You get just an immense amount of data that you can capture when you're doing that type of monitoring.
Yeah, right. And transitioning into that, what can you do to make a peristaltic pump a smart pump?
Well, basically, we add a significant amount of additional instrumentation that you may not have on just an everyday pump from multiple areas of the pump. So, for instance, we're monitoring, you know, the inlet and outlet pressure of the pump, the medium temperature, main bearing, and motor and gearbox vibration, gearbox oil temperature, pump hose leakage. And then finally, we take significant amount of valuable information from the VFD as well. So then from there, we create digital twin imagery of the pumping unit, so that when personnel, when they begin to monitor the pumping unit and they look at the pump on their smartphone or a tablet or a PC that's connected to the internet, they see an exact image of what the actual pump situation looks like. So it's very visual. And then from each of the digital or analog outputs from the instrumentation, we take that information to the cloud, and then we have dashboards that they can visually see what's happening with that pump right on their smartphone. They could be standing right in front of the pump and have every piece of information about what the pressure, you know, all the information they can see right there when they're standing right in front of the product. So and then we do calculations of what basically the normal conditions are, and it's recorded. And then when we start to see deviations from normal conditions, then we can start to trigger alarms for the user. And from these alarms, we can send emails directly to the appropriate users that this alarm occurred, and then they can log on to their Malibu on their smartphone and go into the cloud-based platform and check the nature and the status of the alarm. And if it's something minor, they can choose to address the situation later. Or if it's serious, then they can jump right on it and take care of an issue that could shut the pump down. an example of all this is, you know, and this is quite common in industry, but a lot of people are monitoring bearings, but we do it on our pumps as well. But if the main bearings are experiencing increased vibration, then they're starting to fatigue likely. And so this is their, it doesn't mean they're necessarily going to fail today. It could be 2 weeks or a month or whatever amount of time, but this is the owner's opportunity to dispatch maintenance and replace an inexpensive bearing rather than wait till, you know, severe destruction. And by solving this issue early, they may avoid, you know, more expensive repairs of the pump, like meaning the pump bearing destroys itself and it also destroys the inside of the housing of the pump, so that you've got to either buy a new housing or do expensive welds and such on it. So, and then, of course, that helps you if you just replace the bearing. It also helps you eliminate the more expensive downtime of the pump if you went with the full destruction, let's say. And we also with Malibu, we embed a document management system, so that all of our all the manuals, drawings, and even video can be found by a user at a moment's notice, right on a smartphone. So he could just pull up that pump right on a smartphone and just go to the document section and start looking at a repair video. In normal plant environments, maintenance personnel typically spend first time they work on a new piece of equipment they've never worked on, they may spend 4 to 8 hours researching information about the pump before they can even begin to work. And they may have to go into 7 or 8 different systems in the plant to gather data, all of them having different passwords and usernames and such. So it can be quite time-consuming, and Malibu gives it to them, a simple quick look on their smartphone, tablet, or PC, and within minutes, all the documentation is there so they can start the repairs immediately. And that might help to even speed that asset becoming, prevent that asset from becoming disabled, you know, severely disabled, let's say. So, and also to eliminate those more expensive, costly repairs. And we've seen that, you know, you may need to change the culture of certain maintenance teams even when you start to deliver smart products, because they may go to that pump and they may have an alarm of a slight bearing vibration, but they go out there and they really can't detect it by, you know, noise or even feeling it with their hand. It's that minute, and they may choose to ignore it. And then 2 months later, that main bearing goes, and then they're into the more costly repairs. So they've got to trust that the smart information is giving them a peek at what's coming. And so they need to, you know, do the repairs then. So, and then most big important note on that, we can add Malibu monitoring to any pump. We can obviously put it on all of our pumps, but we can do it to any other manufacturer's pumps, or even any asset. It could be a totally different machine that has nothing to do with pumping, but it's a vital plant asset. And if it's got digital and analog instrumentation, in just about any type of plant environment, we can add smart monitoring to those assets. And even if the instrumentation is not present, we can assist them with adding, you know, the necessary instrumentation to begin monitoring these other assets or another pump, let's say.
Absolutely. I guess knowing all this, what do you wish more pump users knew about peristaltic pumps?
Well, you know, I really wish I could spread more the information about the differences of eccentric rolling designs compared to shoe or multiple roller designs. The advantages of the single roller design, eccentric single roller design, can result, you know, in millions of dollars difference if it's a plant with numerous larger diameter peristaltic pumps. And most users don't know that. And even advertising in pumps and systems magazines as well as other places, it's difficult to convey that message to consumers in just a, you know, a paper advertisement. So one example that kind of comes to mind is in the mining environment, was an operation that needed to pump 330 gallons per minute of a hot, like 203 degree Fahrenheit medium that was both abrasive and severely corrosive both. In that case, they used a duplex peristaltic pump. The duplex peristaltic pump is basically two of those pump heads mounted to one gearbox and motor. And the reason they needed to pump a total of 660 gallons per minute, so they required two of those duplex pumps, where Flowrox could produce 660 gallons per minute with only two individual pump heads. And the important part of all that is that the OPEX, or operational expense, of these two different style of pumps was really drastic. The cost to run that those two pump heads for Flowrox for 1 year was just over $50,000. The cost to run those four pump heads of the duplex style was $398,000 per year. So then if you calculate that over a five-year runtime, you know, you've got $253,000 to run the Flowrox pumps. These are big pumps, but versus $1.9 million to run the other pumps. So the savings over 5 years would be like $1.7 million. So it's some really big numbers. So, and too many customers just don't understand this cost implication, and they assume that the technologies and operating performance are very similar, and costs are very similar, whereas you just heard how drastically different that they can be. So what I want customers to know is that hose pump technology has dramatically improved in recent years due to advancement both in rubber capabilities as well as the newer eccentric roller designs produced by Flowrox. But operating costs can be significantly less by using this type of peristaltic pump design, even to other diaphragm pumps, centrifugal, shoe design pumps, rotary lobe, and progressive cavity pumps. And we even manufacture progressive cavity pumps as well, but there are times when you use one versus the other, and oftentimes certain types of applications, a peristaltic pump will perform much better than a progressive cavity. So in the end, and what I'd like to share is when a customer has either highly abrasive, high solids content, or extremely corrosive or aggressive chemicals, then that the peristaltic might be really an excellent choice for them.
Well, that's a great talk on peristaltic pumps. Todd, I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us.
Drew, appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and your readers and listeners. We appreciate the relationship we have with you, Pumps and Systems Magazine, and certainly appreciate the opportunity to share information with the consumers of peristaltic pumps and other types of pumps. So thanks very much.
And we'd like to thank Todd Loudon of Flowrox for coming on and sharing his knowledge. We want to thank you guys so much for listening. You can subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and CastBox. Please leave us a rating and a review. Until next time, we will talk to you later.